It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Pope Francis heads to the United States following 4 days in Cuba. The Pope travels to the U.S. for his first visit and to U.N. headquarters as head of the Roman Catholic Church. Reverend Brian Lucas, General Secretary of the Australian Catholic Bishops' Conference, spoke of a likely key message the Pope brings.
I think he will want to give a message that's not simply a message for the American people. It's a message for humanity, and I think he will build on what he said in Laudato Si. He'll talk about some of those fundamental ethical imperatives. You know, why is it that our world is being torn apart by conflict, by violence, where we've got this massive movement of people coming into Europe at the present time who are fleeing persecution or who are looking for an opportunity for a better life? What is it about we as humans and the way we relate to each other that allows these things to happen? I think that will probably be a key message.
The Pope will make stops in Washington, Philadelphia, and New York before arriving late Monday in Santiago, Cuba. The Pope celebrated Mass in the eastern city of Holguín, telling tens of thousands to overcome resistance to change. In Burkina Faso, the army converged on the capital Ouagadougou Monday with the aim of disarming the presidential guard, which seized power last week before voters went to the polls to elect a new civil administration. This anti-coup protester called the army approach a national liberation. Meanwhile, the leader of the coup, General Gilbert Diendere, has apologized, saying he plans to hand over power to a civilian administration. The general said he'll step down at the conclusion of talks mediated by the Economic Community of West African States. He also said the junta is allowing for the release of the interim prime minister, who's been under house arrest. General Diendere insisted the coup was the result of what he called biased political polling. This is VOA News. In northeast Nigeria, at least 80 were killed, dozens more wounded in multiple bombings in the Borno state capital Maiduguri and the town of Manguno. The targets in the city of Maiduguri included a mosque, a market, and a viewing center where people were watching a football match. There was no claim of responsibility, but Boko Haram is suspected. In the Somali capital Mogadishu Monday, a suicide car bomb exploded near the presidential palace, killing at least five, wounding several others. The bomber rammed his vehicle packed with explosives near a checkpoint at the presidential palace, which houses the offices of Somalia's president and prime minister. The Islamist group Al-Shabaab has reportedly claimed responsibility. Ahead of Friday's state visit to Washington by Chinese President Xi Jinping, U.S. National Security Advisor Susan Rice warned China Monday that Beijing-sponsored cyber espionage is a major stumbling block to bilateral relations and says such spying must stop.
In his meetings with President Xi, President Obama has repeatedly made plain that state-sponsored, cyber-enabled economic espionage must stop. This isn't a mild irritation. It's an economic and national security concern to the United States. It puts enormous strain on our bilateral relationship, and it is a critical factor in determining the future trajectory of U.S.-China ties.
Analysts say the Friday meeting between Mr. Xi and President Obama are expected to be blunt, focusing in large part on cyber spying, the global economy, and China's territorial ambitions in the South China Sea. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Yukio Amano, said Monday significant progress has been made in the UN's long-running probe into allegations Iran worked to develop nuclear weapons. His recent trip to Iran included a stop at the secretive military site at Parchin. It was welcome news to U.S. spokesman John Kirby.
We believe it's significant that Iran granted access to this facility at Parchin for the first time in the history of this issue, both in his visit and the technical verification activities. What's more important is we look forward to Iran's fully implementing its commitments under the roadmap. That's what matters here.
The IAEA statement comes as Iran and six world powers seek to implement an agreement to keep Tehran from developing a nuclear weapon in exchange for lifting of sanctions that have hobbled the economy. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Moscow Monday agreed to coordinate actions of their country's armed forces in and around Syria to prevent an accidental military confrontation. Their meeting follows reports Moscow has been building up military aircraft and personnel in Syria as part of an effort to help prop up the government of President Bashar al-Assad in his fight against rebel forces. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. West African leaders meet today, Tuesday, on the crisis in Burkina Faso as the country's labor union say no to the ECOWAS peace plan.
Populations are not agree with the ECOWAS decision because we cannot left after killing many people to give amnesty to these militaries. We cannot accept them.
Bazier Batholma is leader and chief negotiator of Burkina Faso's labor unions. Emily Yop will report from Ouagadougou that the coup leader has agreed to ECOWAS's peace plan. Zimbabwe's opposition denies rumors about yet another unity government talks, and campaigning is underway for Guinea's October 11 presidential election.
Our country is in recession this time. There is no work for young people, and any way you went in our country, people saying the same thing. We want to change.
Sidya Touré is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party. Kenyan teachers' strike continues as students prepare to take national exams. And Pope Francis' visit to the United States is changing the tourism industry in New York and Philadelphia. Those stories plus Mark Omar's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leader and chief negotiator of the Confederation of Labor Unions in Burkina Faso says the country's workers reject a proposal by the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, to resolve the political and military crisis in Burkina Faso. Specifically, Bazier Batholma says the unions will never accept to grant amnesty to the coup leaders because they have the blood of Burkinabes on their hands. This as ECOWAS leaders are meeting today, Tuesday, in an emergency session in the Nigerian capital, Abuja, to discuss the crisis in Burkina Faso. Batholma says the civil society is backed by the country's army.
Populations are not agree with the ECOWAS decision. Because we cannot left after killing many people to give amnesty to these militaries. We cannot accept them. So we know that the element of regiment of security presidential is in a part of our army, and they don't want to do the things that we require with our laws and rights. So our society is not agree with ECOWAS conclusions.
Are you saying that there are some elements of the Burkinabe military that support the civil society?
Yes. All military we now coming one Ouagadougou to help population to get up together and said something who is we can help the population to get more peace in our country.
The presidents of Chad and Niger are also telling the coup leaders to go back to the barracks. What do you think?
Yes. We are happy for this position because, you know, this day it is in Burkina Faso, but tomorrow it can be in Niger or Chad. So when a people of one country is in fighting, other people can get up and help them.
The ECOWAS proposal says that the election should be moved to November to be more inclusive. That is to bring in supporters of former President Blaise Compaoré to be in the election. What do you think about that?
We are not agree. You know that Blaise Compaoré is a militarist who is very bad for our people. We cannot do some economic crimes and kill many, many, many bodies. And today, we cannot accept them to be in inclusions because we are in a country who has a voice. So if you do a bad thing, you have to answer in this law. If you do a bad thing, you cannot be accepted to include you in this organization to be elected because you will represent our population and you will take a decision for this people's life. For us, we cannot accept them.
So what do you want to say to ECOWAS leaders? They are meeting on Tuesday in Abuja.
For we, our position is the same position. We say that the decision we is take in Burkina Faso, we don't like this. We won't go back with a whole government of transition. It is the one thing. a two things we call all the leaders in Africa, in ECOWAS, they have to treat their action in good sense, in the peace for our purpose. And we cannot accept that presidents of ECOWAS go to take a decision who is bad for democracy in Africa. We also cannot accept ECOWAS take decisions. We make that a pupil in include in the crimes, economic crimes, and kill many persons can include him to do election. We are not also agree.
Bazier Bassoman is the leader and chief negotiator of Burkina Faso's labor unions. He was speaking with me from the capital, Ouagadougou. Burkina Faso co-leader General Gilbert Diendéré agreed on Monday to the proposed peace deal announced Sunday by the Economic Community of West African States. He said he will hand over power to the transitional government. Earlier on Monday, army troops were heading toward the capital, Ouagadougou, demanding coup participants surrender. Emily Yob reports for VOA from Ouagadougou.
In a matter of hours, Ouagadougou became a ghost town Monday as news spread that army trucks were heading there to defeat presidential guard soldiers who seized power last week. Adama Ouedraogo sits outside the shops he guards. He says he supports the army stepping in.
Ça va nous sauver.
He says that this army intervention is going to save the people because they were really disappointed with the way General Gilbert Diendéré reacted. Anger has been building up over the past few days among anti-coup protesters. Sunday, a proposed peace deal mediated by West African nation was announced. Negotiators agreed to a lot of the demands by the coup leaders, including an amnesty for Diendéré and an inclusive election in exchange for the return to the transitional constitution and to interim president Michel Kafando. Soon after the news of the army intervention broke, Diendéré reacted to the proposed peace deal and agreed to the recommendation. He will hand back the power to the transition government and Prime Minister Isaac Zida will be released. But this proposed peace deal has been criticized by anti-coup protesters, who claim the proposed amnesty for the coup participant is an unacceptable compromise. He says they are disappointed that these people, the putschists, took their guns and have killed their brothers and their mothers and their children. And now they want amnesty for it. He says this proposed measure is a shame for Burkina. Clashes between anti-coup protesters and the putschists left at least 10 people dead and more than 100 injured. Emily Yab for VOA News from Ouagadougou.
Campaigning has begun for Guinea's October 11 presidential election, made possible after President Alpha Condé's government and opposition parties signed an agreement last month. The country's constitutional court has approved 8 presidential candidates, including President Condé. Former Prime Minister Sidya Touré of the Union of Republican Forces and one of the candidates has been campaigning up country. Touré says he's optimistic about his chances if Guinea's independent electoral commission, NUACINE, would be fair. He dismissed suggestion that a divided opposition would most likely hand the vote to President Condé. Touré said Guineans want change after 5 years of President Condé's government marked by recession and unemployment.
My party, I think things are doing well. During was the last 5 years, people have real, you know, information about the situation of the country and the capability of this government to do something for us. And really, we have a campaign from forest part of our country. So we are going in Upper Guinea. And during this week, things have been very well, really.
I hear that the opposition, you are going separately, and then Selu Dalin Diallo is also going his way. You did not come together. Why that?
Because we didn't have one candidate. You know, we discussed about this matter, and we didn't have an agreement on it. So we go like in 2010.
The suggestion by some people is that by doing that, you will probably hand the election to the president, Alpha Condé.
Absolutely, the reality of the ground on the field here, because I told you, 5 years, people know our country is in recession this time. There is no work for young people, and anyway you went in our country, people saying the same thing. We know that he cannot do something for us. We want to change. The real question about was the election is a cheating. If not, you know, we're sure that he will not succeed.
So are you confident of your side emerging victorious on October 11th?
I'm really confident if we solve some big problem we have here. The first one and biggest problem is the electoral list. We bring some experts from European Union, and we didn't do nothing because the Electoral Commission did give the possibility to go inside the electoral list and maybe to help us to absolutely withdraw some correction. You know, we need. We have more than 900,000 people. We don't know where they're coming from, so which is the most important problem we have in the process. If not, we know that Alpha cannot give any kind of explanation what he did during those 5 years.
Why did you not continue? Why did the opposition not continue to make those demands about electoral reform before signing an agreement to go into the election?
We did it during 2 years, you know. If you remember, we have had, you know, a rally on Twitter, and we lost again. Four people were killed for that. And we continue to just say until yesterday again that they absolutely doesn't want to move because they have no other solution to try to keep the election. If not, they cannot convince population to vote for them.
Sidi Ature is the leader of the Opposition Union of Republican Forces Party. He was speaking with me from the town of Mamou Dabola in Guinea. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barté in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 22nd. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. As many as 100 people were killed in northern Nigeria in a series of coordinated explosions suspected to be the work of Boko Haram militants late on Sunday. Witnesses say four blasts detonated within 25 minutes and hit crowded parts of Maiduguri city. The targets included a mosque, a market, and a viewing center where people were watching a football match. Nigerian military officials told VOA Hausa service that another 95 people were injured. Police put the death toll at 54. However, other officials and witnesses say more than 100 people were killed. There was no claim of responsibility. However, Boko Haram frequently attacks markets, mosques, and other sites where large crowds gather. Reports of negotiations between the ruling ZANU-PF and the two formations of the opposition movement for democratic change, led by former Zimbabwe Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai and Professor Welshma Humbe, about a possible government of national unity, are getting mixed reactions from the parties. Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports.
A report by Newsday this weekend that secret talks are underway between ZANU-PF and the Tsvangirai and Ngube-led MDC formations is facing heavy criticism and denial by all parties mentioned. According to the report, which Newsday says is based on authoritative sources, the parties met in Ghana to discuss, one, how the opposition parties could help ZANU-PF revive the economy, and secondly, disrupting any coalition plans between former Vice President Joyce Mujuru's alleged People's First Party and the Tsvangirai-led MDC. The paper quotes unnamed sources confirming that party representatives, quote, had meetings in Kenya and Ghana, but these are preliminary, close quote. While both MDCs confirmed that indeed such meetings did take place in at least Ghana, both denied that it had anything to do with the above stated talks. Here is MDC spokesperson Obed Gutu.
Let me take this opportunity to put the record straight. There is absolutely no issue of talks taking place between the MDC, led by President Morgan Tsvangirai, and the ZANU-PF, aimed at forming a so-called GNU2.
Also acknowledging the meeting, but not the substance, is Professor Welshma Ngube.
There was a meeting in Ghana.
As reported in Newsday, Gutu says representatives of parties, namely ZANU-PF's July Moyo and Opamu Chinguri, MDCT's Douglas Monzora and Lynette Karenyi, and MDCN's Moses Mzila Ndlovu and Miriam Mushaya, did indeed meet in Ghana. The meeting was for secretary generals of the party.
That meeting was primarily what is called a secretary general's forum.
Ngube, who did not name names, also confirmed that the meeting did take place, but was a standard procedure. However, ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo denied any knowledge of such a meeting.
We in ZANU-PF and the spokesman of the party, I know nothing about such talks.
Asked repeatedly about this, Moyo said there was no truth to the matter.
We are saying there's no such thing. They're denying that also in the papers today.
Speculation about a second GNU formation, or at least talks to help bring back some of the social and economic gains of the inclusive government formed between ZANU-PF and the MDC between 2008 and 2013, has been circulating in the media for a while. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu.
Kenyan students have been absent from school since the beginning of the month due to a national teachers' strike. Despite the lack of instruction, many students are still scheduled to start taking national exams next month. VOA's Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
The Kenyan government has ordered public and private schools across Kenya closed as a national teachers' strike reaches its third week. Many private schools are ignoring the order issued Friday, but public schools are unable to do so. Teachers and students are waiting for the Kenya National Union of Teachers and the government to resolve salary issues. Teachers are demanding a 50 to 60% pay increase. Union Secretary General William Sosion addressed the issue Monday at a news conference.
The so-called harmonization of 2009 failed to factor in between 1997 and 2009, both years inclusive, teachers were denied the 4% annual salary increment given to all public servants. It is this historical injustice that the judgment of the Employment and Labor Relations Court sought to partly ameliorate.
The Supreme Court previously ordered a 50 to 60% pay increase for teachers, but the government of President Uhuru Kenyatta argues teachers are paid well enough already and it does not have funds available to fulfill the court's mandate. Sosion says the government should obey the court, alluding to funds that could be available.
Significantly, the president's statement made no mention of the billions lost through corruption and tax evasion.
National exams are scheduled to start in October. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Pope Francis' visit to the United States has changed the tourism industry in New York and Philadelphia, where events are expected to draw over a million visitors. In one New York Italian neighborhood, it is the face of the Pope himself that is generating profits and satisfying customers. Raymond Taylor reports.
Welcome to Belmont, the Little Italy of the Bronx, New York, and home to Artuso Pastry, a bakery and cafe that is gearing up for Pope Francis' visit with a special edition dessert. Traditionally known as the black and white cookie, a signature New York shortbread pastry with chocolate and vanilla icing, the family-owned business came up with the idea for a papal variation during Pope Benedict's visit in 2008. Atop the cookie, the vanilla icing becomes a tasty paste for edible paper, printed with edible color ink featuring Pope Francis' face. The bakery's manager says some Catholics are afraid to eat it.
Some of them want to frame it. Some of them want to freeze it. Some people are afraid to eat it. They think it's a sin to eat it. And some people are the complete opposite, and they think it's a blessing to eat it and miracles might come from it.
At $2.95 a piece, sales have rocketed. Baker Sergio Hernandez says making them is a source of pride.
As a Catholic, it gives me joy to place the image of the Pope on a cookie. I'm proud to be one of the people that's doing this.
But not everyone is sold. Doris Murray, a loyal client at the bakery and fan of Pope Francis, thinks it's all a gimmick.
This whole cookie situation, or the pictures, or give your money to an organization that he advocates for and believes in.
For the bakery's manager, it's about creating a satisfying experience. Her goal is for Pope Francis to try his cookie for himself. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with volleyball. Egypt edged Tunisia by 3-2 at the Men's World Volleyball Championships in Tokyo, Japan on Monday. Today, Tuesday, Egypt play Venezuela as Tunisia engage Australia. Turning to athletics, Kenyan Isabel Ochichi clocked a personal best of 2 hours, 30 minutes and 20 seconds to win the Sanlam Cape Town Marathon here in South Africa on Sunday. She improves her personal best by over a minute. What's more, Ochichi also shaved off 37 seconds from the previous course record by Ethiopian Meseret Biro. Another Kenyan, Shadrach Kemboi, prevailed in the men's race in 2 hours 11 minutes and 41 seconds. Meanwhile, in China, Kenyan Mariko Kiplagat Kipchumba triumphed in 2 hours and 11 minutes at the Beijing International Marathon on Sunday. Ethiopian Betelmel Moges carried the day in the women's race in 2 hours and 27.31 seconds. In the Netherlands, Kenyans Edwin Kipto and Joyce Chepkurui ran the world's quickest men's and women's times this year in 10 miles at the Dam to Dam Loop road race on Sunday. Kipto covered the distance in 45 minutes and 19 seconds, while Chepkurui carried the day in the women's race in 51 minutes and 30 seconds. In Colombia, Ethiopian Belianesh Olgira clocked 33 minutes and 55 seconds to win the Carrera de la Mujer 10-kilometer race in the Colombian capital, Bogota, on Sunday. Finally, Egypt bagged 76 gold, 56 silver, and 61 bronze medals to top the overall medal table at the just-concluded All-Africa Games in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo. South Africa were runners-up with 41 gold, 39 silver, and 34 bronze medals. Algeria placed third with 40 gold, 42 silver, and 36 bronze medals. And that's it for Debrick Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, September 22nd.
The death of Mrs. H.D. Awolowo, the wife of late Fabofumi Awolowo, is a great blow to Nigerians, an icon. My mom, Maya Soro, and the souls of the faithful departed, rest in perfect peace with the Lord. Ado, Comrade Mary Patrick Okorograph, our blue premises at an Arashuku in Abuja State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us here in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A suicide car bomb has exploded near Somalia's presidential palace in the capital, Mogadishu, killing at least 7 people. Hospital sources said at least another 21 people were injured in the blast, which occurred just after 6 p.m. local time on Monday. Doctors at Mogadishu's largest hospital, Medina, told VOA Somali Service that more than half the injured are in serious condition. The leader of last week's coup in Burkina Faso has apologized to the country and says he's planning to hand over power to a civilian government. In a statement on Monday, General Gilbert Diendere said he will step down as the country's de facto leader at the conclusion of talks mediated by the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. The regional group is holding an emergency summit in Nigeria's capital today, Tuesday, to discuss the situation. General Diendere, head of the Presidential Guard, which seized power last Wednesday, told VOA's French to Africa service on Monday that he wants to avoid bloodshed. And as many as 100 people were killed in northern Nigeria in a series of coordinated explosions suspected to be the work of Boko Haram militants. That's it for this Tuesday, September 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, President Obama welcomes Pope Francis to Washington, D.C. His Holiness' visit to the U.S. comes ahead of his trip to Africa in November. We'll discuss the significance of the Pope's travel next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time
with David Bandy.